Our lesson this morning is entitled, Set Your Mind on Things Above. Look up. Think higher. Colossians 3 and verse 1 says, If ye then be risen with Christ, seek those things which are above, where Christ sitteth on the right hand of God. Set your affection on things above, not on things on the earth. And then he goes on to look at some specifics that we'll mention in a moment. But think about that word affection. When I say the word affection, what do you think of? Affection generally brings to mind things you like, things you care about. Even love comes to mind when we mention the word affection. We're not very affectionate toward people that we don't care about. We don't give hugs and people don't give kisses if it's not somebody they like, and they don't hold hands or whatever with someone they don't like. So when we think of the word affection, we think about you're liking something quite a lot. Now he says set your affection, set your desire, set your love, your interest, your likes on things above and not on things on the earth. Now do we do that? Do we like the things that are above? Or do we like the things that are on this earth? Do we like to come together and assemble as the church and sing praises to God and study His Word and pray and focus our minds on spiritual things? Or do we do this because we think we have to, but we'd like to be somewhere else doing something else? We need to think about that. Do we really set our affection on things above? Or are we simply thinking, well, I've got to do it, so I'll suffer through this so that I can get on to something that I do like? He says, set your affection. Start liking these things. For one thing, you'll have a much more enjoyable time at church if you like it than if you're miserably sitting there suffering through it. But then he goes on to explain some of these things. Let's look at verse 3. For ye are dead, and your life is hid with Christ in God. When Christ, who is our life, shall appear, then shall ye also appear with him in glory. Mortify, or in other words, put to death, therefore, your members which are upon the earth. Fornication, uncleanness, inordinate affection, evil concupiscence and covetousness, which is idolatry. You know, we take covetousness to be a pretty light thing when we say somebody, oh, well, they're just jealous. They just covet those things you've got. They're jealous. They're envious because you've got something that... That's not a light thing. The Bible says that's the same as idolatry. That's the same as bowing down to Baal to desire something that belongs to someone else. To set your affection on those things is equal to worshiping someone, something that's not God. He says those are the same. Covetousness, which is idolatry. For which thing's sake the wrath of God comes on the children of disobedience, in the which you also walked sometime when you lived in them. But now, ye also put off all these: anger, wrath, malice, blasphemy, filthy communication out of your mouth. Lie not to one to another, seeing that you have put off the old man with his deeds, and have put on the new man, which is renewed in the knowledge after the image of him that created him. Now you think about that. What he's telling us too, he's telling us that as Christians, we're supposed to be different than we used to be. Does that seem odd to us? Somehow, sometimes we think that we can be Christians and keep living the same worldly lives, keep telling the same lies and using the same filthy language and doing the same filthy things that we did before, and that'll be okay because we're Christians now. God will forgive us because we're Christians now. He says, don't keep doing those things. You're dead to the world. We don't keep doing those things. We need to change. We need to be a new man. We need to have put off the old man. We need to be setting our affection on things above. We need to start liking heavenly things instead of worldly things. Unfortunately, in our society, that's hard to do because our society impresses upon us from a very early age how important having the right things is. Oh, you just can't live if you don't have this and this and this. And all of the things that are truly important, obedience to God, righteousness, worship, those things don't amount to a hill of beans to the world. They never have. But the things, the possessions, that's what's important. You got to get this. You got to have that. And you are what you have. If you don't have a good enough car or a good enough house or a good enough job, then you're nobody and you're not important. That's what the world tells us. That's what the devil tells us. But God says you are not what you have. What you have does not determine who you are in this world. And certainly doesn't determine it in the world to come. But the way you deal with what you have here on this earth may determine where you go in the world to come. And so we need to be sure that we have the proper attitude. The saying has been said, we are to love people and use things. Unfortunately, we live in a society today that loves things and uses people. That's where we live. You know it's true. You know people who do that. You may be one of those people who does that. Oh, you've got to have those things, and you'll use anybody or abuse anybody to get those things. But that's not the Christian way. Can you imagine Jesus hurting someone in order to get possession of a thing? Remember, Jesus didn't even have a place to lay his head. He lived in this world, but he wasn't of this world. He knew there were better things, and he knew there was a better place. And he was working to help us to understand that as well. Is it possible for us to live in the world and not be of the world? John 17, in verses 14 through 18, Jesus in his prayer, speaking of the disciples in particular, but the same could be said of us. He says, I have given them thy word, and the world has hated them because they are not of the world, even as I am not of the world. I pray not that thou shouldest take them out of the world, but that thou shouldest keep them from the evil. They are not of the world, even as I am not of the world. Sanctify them through thy truth. Thy word is truth. As thou hast sent me into the world, even so have I sent them also into the world. Jesus sent his apostles into the world, and he sends us out into the world. Oh, what a dangerous place the world is. But he sends us out. He expects us to live in this world. And yet, he expects us to remain distinct and separate from the world. And that's hard to do. It's so hard. I know Brother Enloe, when he has come and talked to us about why they teach the preachers there in their own country rather than bringing them over here, one of the reasons is because when they bring them over here, they become involved in the lifestyle of this nation, the affluence, the wealth. And they don't want to leave it to go back to those poor countries. It's hard when there are so many worldly things around us to not like those things just a little too much. But that's what Jesus calls us to do. He calls us to live in this world and yet to separate ourselves from the things of this world. Not to be covetous, not to be greedy, not to be jealous and envious, and to love the riches and the possessions. He calls us instead to keep our eyes focused on heaven. And it's hard when all around us, even when we look up, I know we've been down along the coast and they have these planes even fly across the sky advertising things. They may advertise a restaurant or whatever it might be, but they have advertisements even up in the sky. So there's no place you can look. You look around, you know, you see billboards and you see stores that are advertising things with big signs everywhere, and you look down on the ground and you see the flyers that came out of the newspaper that somebody's thrown on the ground, and they're advertising something. The world is obsessed with things, and they want us to be obsessed with earthly things, physical things. But we have to keep in mind that everything that we can see, everything that we can see, is going to disappear. And the only thing that is real are the things we can't see. Now that seems backwards. The world tells you, well, the only thing that's real is what you can see, what you can touch, and what you can hold on to. That's the only thing that's real. But God teaches us different. Those things aren't real. They're real material, but they don't really last. They're not the things that are going to make the real difference in our lives, and certainly in our eternity. Our emphasis should not be on this world. 1 John 2:15-17 teaches us that we should not love the world. John tells us, do not love the world, neither the things that are in the world. If any man loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. That's pretty harsh, isn't it? Because how many of us, I know we sing the song, "This world is not my home," but we also sing the song, "I'd like to stay here longer." Why? Why would I like to stay here longer if it's not my home and if it's not what I love? Because I'm still struggling with that fleshly desire, that physical desire for this world. And it's hard because God created us to be physical beings. I'd like to stay here longer. But then we say, but this world's not my home. Well, aren't we going to eventually get tired of staying here and want to go home? I'm afraid that for far too many of us, this world is our home. This is home, and this is where we want to be, and this is where we want to stay, and we don't ever want to leave. We like this place. We like it a lot. And he says, love not the world, for if any man loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. And when he says love not the world, he's not saying don't love the people of the world. You know, for God so loved the world that he gave his Son. We're supposed to love the world in that sense, that we want them to be saved. But we don't love this planet and the physical things of this planet. Or even the friends, even the people that we don't love them so much that we don't want to leave. Notice what he goes on to say. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, the pride of the life, is not of the Father, but is of the world. And the world passes away, and the lust thereof. But he that does the will of God abides forever. See, we've got a choice. We can pass away with this world, or we can abide forever. All of the things that we see, all of these lusts and desires for physical things are not from God. They're from the devil. They're from the world. It's the world trying to get us so attached and so obsessed with physical that we forget spiritual. Because the world doesn't want to be condemned by those who are living right. And that's what they will see. When they see somebody that's living right, they can't stand that. Jesus said, they've hated me and they'll hate you also. Why? Because by our living like Christ, we condemn them. We don't have to even say it. We don't even have to show them the Scripture. Just by living right in everything that we do, we condemn them. And they know it. That's why they try so hard to get us to lie and cheat and steal and do all the things that they do and drink and all. And they want us to do it because as long as we're not doing it, they feel guilty. But if they can get us doing it too, then they're, see, I'm not so bad. There's somebody that's supposed to be a Christian, and they do the same thing. And that's why we have to fight so hard against that. We need to avoid having our mind on earthly things. Philippians 3, 17 through 20. Brethren, be ye followers together of me, and mark them which walk so as you have us for an example. For many walk, of whom I have told you often, and now tell you even weeping, that they are the enemies of the cross of Christ, whose end is destruction, whose God is their belly, and whose glory is in their shame, who mind earthly things. Do they care about earthly things? Does that sound like us sometimes? Notice what he says. Their God is their belly. How many of us are obsessed with eating and what we eat and food, and our belly has taken the place? Because that's all we think about. Some of you probably sitting there thinking that right now. Boy, my tummy's growling. I got to get home and get something to eat. That's what we're thinking about, is food and feeding our belly instead of thinking about God and how to worship Him. If we're putting our belly before God, then hasn't that belly become our God? That's what He's talking about. Their belly is their God. That's all they think about. That's all they care about. Whose glory is in their shame. Now, does that not sound like the homosexual movement? That, oh, they glory in the fact that they're gay. Proud to be gay and all the gay pride parades. And they're proud. They ought to be ashamed of it. Instead, they're proud of it. And how about all the men who are bragging about all the women they've been with? And the women who are doing the same thing, bragging about the men they've had? They ought to be ashamed. But instead, that's what they're glorying in. They're glorying in the shame. That's the world we live in. Is that what we want to do? Is that what we want to be? Who mind earthly things. All they care about is the worldly, the physical. You know, the world causes us, or at least causes some, to stray from the faith. And it can cause us to stray from the faith, which is why we must beware. 1 Timothy chapter 6. Verse 10 in particular, he says, "For the love of money is the root of all evil, which while some coveted after, they have erred from the faith." In other words, they've left the faith. They've wandered away from the faith. And he goes on to say, "and pierced themselves through with many sorrows." You know, we see people who have a lot of money and we think, boy, they must be happy. Paul says, they pierced themselves through with many sorrows. They're not happy. Because happiness can't be bought with money. So many of them are miserable and suffering. But what a sad thing to stray away from the faith, following our own greed and desire for physical wealth. And I mean money. Money. You know what that is? That's a piece of paper with ink on it. This isn't worth any more than this. I mean, when you get right down to it, it's a piece of paper with ink on it. Now, we've made the agreement in our society that this particular piece of paper with these particular inks on them will allow us to trade this for goods. But all it is paper. You'll trade that, won't you? But that's you know, there's no real value. It's just paper. And we write checks. And we do fund transfers. That you know what a fund transfer is? All that is a little electronic signal, just like the electricity that's making these lights go. And what we decided that it's just numbers in a bank account. Honestly, if something happened, if the economy collapsed, as it has in the past, you think about like during the Civil War, the Confederates printed out the money. That money was wound up by the end of the war. It was worthless. And you couldn't have traded a $100 Confederate bill for a cup of beans. It's not worth anything. In the long run, it's not worth anything. And yet we'll trade our soul for it. It wasn't too awful long ago somebody on eBay was trying to auction their soul off. When they finally found out about it, they pulled it off of there. But somebody was trying to say, what's the difference in that and what so many of us do anyway? We sell our soul to the devil for some money. Some paper with ink on it. Or maybe some coins that aren't even made out of metals that are really all that precious anymore. I mean, that used to be made out of silver and things like that, but not, you know, now they're just all, they're not much better than aluminum. But, you know, a little copper and a little zinc. In fact, most of that money you'd probably be better off if you ate it. It'd at least give you some minerals. But we worry about these things. And we allow that wealth to draw us away from God. There's some liquid sunshine coming down out there. Of course, James 4 and 4, James tells us that friendship with the world is enmity with God. You cannot be the friend of the world and be the friend of God at the same time. Friendship with the world. I see some folks left their windows down. Didn't think it was going to rain. I don't know how it is raining. The sun is shining bright. But we can't be a friend of the world and a friend of God at the same time. You know, you ever see that? People try to play both sides of the fence. We always pick at Alex about this with sporting events. Well, you're just trying to say, you know, just say, well, I want this team to win. I think this team's going to win and everything. And everybody says, well, you can't pick both teams. But that's what we try to do sometimes with God. We think, well, I can be God's friend and yet I can still be worldly too. Now, a true fan is going to always pick their team, even if they know their team's going to lose. Well, we're in a much better situation because we know God is going to win. And yet, so many times, we still are trying to play both sides. We still want to hang on to the worldly side of things. Of course, we cannot have fellowship with the world and Christ. 2 Corinthians 6, verse 14 through 7, and verse 1, in verse 17 in particular, God says, come out from among them and be separate. He says, can Christ be joined with Belial? What part does an unbeliever and a believer have together? And yet, who are our friends? Who do we spend most of our time with? Oh yeah, we come to church for a couple of hours a week. But most of our time, who do we spend it with? We spend it with believers or unbelievers? Now, it's one thing if we're having studies with those unbelievers trying to teach them. That's one thing. But that's probably not what we're doing. What we're probably doing is hanging out with them, having fellowship with them. Now, why would we be having fellowship with people who are not even trying to go to heaven? What fellowship do we have with someone who's not even trying to go to heaven? We can't have fellowship with the world and have fellowship with Christ. In Matthew chapter 16, of course, in verse number 16, Simon has just made that amazing confession, "You're the Christ, the Son of the living God." A few moments later, and this is how fickle people can be and how quickly we can go from being right to being dead wrong. Just a few verses later here, just a little time on from this, Jesus was explaining how he was going to have to suffer. And down in verse 22, Peter began to rebuke him and say, "No, Lord, this shall not be unto thee." And Jesus turned and said to Peter, "Get thee behind me, Satan. Thou art an offense unto me, for thou savorest," in other words, you don't like the taste of the things that be of God, "but those that be of men." Peter just that quick just lost it. So he went from consent, "You're the Christ, the Son of the living God," to turn around trying to stop Jesus from doing what he needs to do as the Christ, the Son of the living God. And Jesus had to rebuke him. He said, "You've got your mind on the world instead of on the spiritual thing." He said, "I'm trying to explain to you that I've got to suffer. Don't try to stop it. That's the whole reason I came here." Jesus came to seek and save that which was lost. He came to die on that cross. And here's Peter trying to stop him from doing it. And that's when then Jesus makes the statement, "What is a man profited if he shall gain the whole world and lose his own soul? Or what shall a man give in exchange for his soul?" Jesus says, if I saved my life, and of course, in Jesus' case, it wouldn't have just been his soul. He would have lost all of us if he had saved his life. Even the life of the Son of God wasn't that important to jeopardize all of those souls. He was willing to lay it down for us. Our emphasis must be on the spiritual and not the physical things. We need to look at the unseen things. And that's kind of hard to do. You ever tried to look at the air? Stare at it. You go cross-eyed trying to look at the air. It's a thing that you can't see, really. Unless you put some powdered dust up there, then you can tell the air is there. But we need to look at things. And I'm not talking about the air, because that, even though we can't see it, it's still a physical thing. We can feel it. You wave your hand in front of your face, and you know the air is there. You can feel it coming. But we need to look for unseen things. 2 Corinthians 4 and verse 18 says, "We do not look at the things which are visible, but at the things which are invisible." Because those are the things that are eternal. The things which can be seen are temporary. They're not going to last. When the end of time comes, the end of this world and all of the things that are in this world, it's all going to be gone, Peter tells us. Well, are we thinking about natural or spiritual things? 1 Corinthians 2 and verse 13 teaches us that we're to compare spiritual things with spiritual things. We need to be thinking about the spiritual things. We need to be learning about the spiritual things. And in 1 Corinthians 3, in verse 1, Paul is very disappointed with the church at Corinth, and he says, "I can't even talk to you like spiritual people because you're not spiritual. I have to talk to you like worldly, carnal people because that's what you are. You're fleshly. You're carnal. All you care about is the physical. So I can't talk to you about spiritual things. I can't talk to you about heaven. I can't talk to you about prayer and worship and all of these spiritual things and the sacrifice of Christ and what it means to us and God's grace and all that. I can't talk to you about those things because I've got to spend my time talking to you about physical things that you ought to have gotten beyond." He said, "You're carnal. You're like babes in Christ. I feed you with milk and not solid food because you can't handle the solid food. You're still a babe. Spiritually, your growth is stunted. You haven't grown beyond infancy. But then, of course, godliness, and we're supposed to be godly, aren't we? Well, godliness is being spiritually minded. Having a spiritual mind, that is what godliness is. Thinking about the spiritual things rather than the physical things. 1 Timothy 4 and verse 7, he says, exercise yourself toward godliness. And he says, bodily exercise profits a little. We know that. We know you exercise, it makes you healthy. You know, you live longer. You lose weight. You know, all those good things. Your lungs are stronger. Your heart's stronger. We know exercise profits a little. It's good for us. But, he says, godliness is profitable for all things. It's useful. It's good in everything. Then we've got to understand that God's grace, and we think about God's grace, we think, oh, what a wonderful thing. God gave us His grace. Well, that's good. That's wonderful, and He certainly did. But one thing we've got to understand about God's grace is that God's grace should teach us some things. In Titus chapter 2 and verse 11, the grace of God that brings salvation has appeared to all men, teaching us. Here's what it teaches us. That denying ungodliness and worldly lust, we should live soberly, righteously, and godly in this present world. And we can't do that watching Days of Our Lives all day. Because there is nothing sober, righteous, or godly about, and I don't want to pick on just one television show because, you know, but we're obsessed with being entertained by worldly things. We need to be focusing our mind on spiritual things. We're worried about the war in Iraq and the war on terror, and we ought to be worried about the biggest terrorist of all, Satan, instead. Because it doesn't matter if a terrorist comes and blows this building up if I'm right with God. It doesn't matter. Because this is all going to disappear anyway. God's going to burn it all up. He's going to destroy every bit of it. So we need to make up our mind. Am I going to be worried and fretting and thinking and constantly obsessed with worldly things? Or am I going to be worried about making sure that whenever the end of my physical life does come, I'll go to heaven with God? Keep my mind on those spiritual things. We need to deny ungodliness. But we don't. You know, in Romans, it talks about all these wicked things that the people do, and it then talks about those who not only do these things, but have pleasure in them that do them. And what do? When we entertain ourselves by watching the filth and listening to the filth of music and television and movies, we're having pleasure in those that are working unrighteousness. We're having pleasure in it. And in Romans, Paul says that's even worse than those who are doing it, is to have pleasure in those that are doing it. We need to get our minds on spiritual things. Are we going to do the lusts of men or the will of God? 1 Peter chapter 4, verses 1 through 6. Particularly talking about Christ's suffering. Then in verse 2, he says, then of us, that he no longer should live the rest of his time in the flesh to the lusts of men, but to the will of God. For the time past of our life may suffice us to have wrought the will of the Gentiles, when we walked in lasciviousness and lust and excess of wine, revelings, banquetings, and abominable idolatries. But he says, wherein they think it strange that you run not with them to the same excess of riot. So you used to do that. unfortunately, we've got folks that are still doing that. We need to get over that. We need to get beyond that. We need to get away from that. And we need to start getting on the spiritual. We need to put on Christ. Romans 13 and verse 14. And being spiritually minded is what brings us life and peace. You want to know why it's such a struggle day in and day out? Because you're fighting a double battle. Your spirit is already having to battle against your fleshly desires. But it's twice as hard when your spirit's having to battle your fleshly desires and your mind. You see, if you get your mind on the right side, if you get your mind on the same side with your spirit, then the fleshly desires are outnumbered 2-1, and they're going to lose. But if your mind is on the fleshly side, then the spirit's going to lose. In order to have peace, Romans 8 and verse 6 says, for to be carnally minded is death, but to be spiritually minded is life and peace. You wonder why you're in turmoil inside, constantly fighting these battles? Because you haven't made up your mind to get your mind on the right side of things. Your mind flip-flops. Sometimes it's a spiritual and sometimes it's worldly. Sometimes it's heavenly and sometimes it's carnal. Make up your mind. Put your mind on the right side. And the rest of those things will take care of themselves. If you've got a spiritual mind that's looking out for your spirit, for your soul, for what's important, for the thing, the part of you that's going to last. If your mind is watching out for that part, instead of watching out for this old body and all of its lusts and desires, when it's going to die and turn back into dust anyway, what does it profit a man if he gains his life and loses his soul? Gains the whole world and loses his soul. What's the profit there? There isn't any. It's a loss. It's a negative. If you're here this morning and you have a need to respond to the invitation for any reason, maybe you haven't been setting your things on heavenly things, your mind on heavenly things. Maybe you've been obsessed with the physical, the earthly, the carnal. If you're here and you have a need to respond to the invitation, we ask that you do so as we stand and as we sing.